Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're in a More Like Radio live page listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room? It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. It's right there on the right, stupid.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
By the way,
the Nerd Hour.
Tattoos and touchdowns.
Last Sunday show.
Masters of None.
360 on 420.
Welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast.
The Conti and Kenny Show.
OSW Review.
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Alcohol by volume.
My time now.
It's time for Dutch and Royce. No! Get ready for Hippo Juice.
The Elvis and Albert Show.
The Cousin Joe Show.
It's High Society Radio.
Give it up for the deep
beat. You're listening to Atomicast.
It's all about me.
Shy kids.
Orange Room.
More Like Radio!
Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zunes, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Obviously, I was... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to explain it, but...
No, explain radio to Ashley.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Would you mind taking Colin for a walk about 8?
Huh? That's 2,000 hours. Oh, yeah.
Now, here's your host. That's Ashley, and this is...
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Hopefully you're all okay wherever you are. You're listening to Antisocial Game Radio live on morelikeradio.com. Literally, it's the big countdown now, ladies and gents. 10 weeks until MLR Live 3, which basically means 10 weeks from Thursday, I get on a plane and fly across the world yet again. But yeah, don't forget to say, yeah, MLR Live 3, it's very big, very important. We are going to be down in Lakeland in Florida. Was it 8:30, 9 o'clock it starts till midnight. We're partnering up with the Moxie LaFemme Burlesque troupe. I can't wait. I'm ready to go. Literally, as you know, every week I sound more and more excited as I count down. Literally, it's 10 weeks to go. It's, you know, just over 2 months, but you know, I'd rather look at it as 10 weeks instead of 2 months. It makes it seem a lot simpler and more fun for the countdown, actually. But yeah, don't forget, say the 25th of April, downtown Lakeland in Florida. Get yourself there. It's going to be a great night. Mersh is going to be doing some stand-up. Or if he doesn't turn up, I will be there with his Killjoy CD playing over a microphone. But no, it's going to be a really fun night and loads of attractive women. Get yourself down there. Come and see us all as you do last year, year before. You know, we've got a great bundle of listeners across the across the planet, really. But yeah, so MLR Live 3 is coming up really soon. I can't wait. Also, you know, other stuff. I've got my Final Fantasy event I'm going to in a couple of weeks, which I'm looking forward to as I'm sort of playing more and more Final Fantasy. If I do start to sound a bit tired during the show, it is basically because I've been up since like 4:30 this morning. It's now 9:00. Basically, I was playing like Final Fantasy 14 for about 2 or 3 hours before I had to go to work. As you do. But yeah, so I'll talk more about that in a sec. But yeah, so I've got Pokemon Nationals as well. I haven't touched any Pokemon. And I probably won't touch the game until I actually go to Nationals, just to, you know, get myself sorted. There's nothing really I need to do with my team anyway. They're all ready. I just need to, you know, use them and then win or lose, really. I'm not too fussed anymore, to be honest. Yeah, I sort of think I'm going to get over that the Pokemon phase again. I don't know. Just bored, really. That's pretty much it. But as this is Antisocial Game Radio, you can call into the show. It's Antisocial Game Radio. It's all one word on Skype. If you want to email the show, it's antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's MLRGamerRadio. Also, we have a Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. And also, you can like the show's Facebook page, which is facebook.com/antisocialgameradio. I haven't played much of anything apart from one game, which is Final Fantasy 14. And I literally just can't stop. I just want to sort of sit here for hours and hours and hours and do stuff. And it takes a long time to do stuff, and I don't really have much time of anything else, to be honest. So literally I can sit here for hours and hours and hours and just do the same old shit. I made myself a new character because I had trouble with the character I was using before, mainly because, well, I wasn't doing a good enough job of what I was supposed to be doing, which was, well, being a gladiator, which basically means being a tank. I just had trouble with it. I don't know. I've been on literally on various forums and Facebook pages and groups and shit, sort of commenting about, you know, just trying to not find it hard, but it's sort of trying to manage all the bits using a controller. And everyone else is saying, well, why don't you just, you know, hook up a mouse and keyboard? And my response is pretty much, if I wanted to use a mouse and keyboard, I would have bought it for the PC. And, you know, so I got rid of the old character. I made myself a new one. He's a Thermitage, Elizan. So far, I'm at level 15. It's a good character. It's good. It's a very good character. It's quite funny. I mean, I picked up a pair of glasses from a quest today. Now my character looks like Harry Potter, basically, which is sort of a reflection on myself, really. I am having a lot of fun with this character. It's actually quite good. I used the collector's edition, and I was sort of worried that, when I made my first character, I got the collector's edition items and went to the Mog delivery Moogle thing. And I thought maybe, you know, if I got a second character, I wouldn't get the items because I already collected them. But I'm guessing that how many characters I get all get the same amount of the same items again, again. So basically, I've got my items, I've got my minions, and, you know, when I do get to the right level to unlock the quest that lets me have a mount, I will get that one, which I'm looking forward to because I want to ride the Fat Chocobo, basically around everywhere. I'm still having so much fun with this game. I am sort of skipping through bits and pieces where I am now because, I mean, I got to level 20 with my Gladiator, and I think I got like two duties in. They're sort of like instances, missions where you sort of pick up a bunch of randoms and all do a quest. And I'd say that's the problem I had because I was tanking, but it wasn't, you know, it was weird because that's my first ever, you know, job as first ever sort of multiplayer, you know, raid, group, whatever thing you call it, that sort of stuff. And it sort of not scared me as such, but it was like, I know what I'm supposed to be doing, like taking all the attacks, but I don't know. I'm sort of questioning the whole gameplay mechanics of, you know, what they say of being a tank. So it's like, well, I'm supposed to press this button, that button, that button to do these sort of moves. But it's like, well, what, you know, I'm thinking real world strategy, what, you know, people were doing in the real world. If someone's like stabbing you with a sword and there's some other idiot doing a flash, like trying to create a disturbance and like draw your attention, what's going to draw your attention more? The guy who's jumping around like an idiot or the guy who's actually stabbing you? And I was stabbing all these people and doing all the moves I'm supposed to be doing, and it's just, I'm still not taking all the damage that I'm supposed to be. I mean, you know, there was two duties that we did, and, you know, I did them. You know, we completed it, But I don't know. I'm just sort of so lazy. I mean, I'm just planning to do some crafting and, you know, trying to make money so I can, you know, hopefully buy my own airship. But yeah, I'm getting involved with the world, and I mean, the quests I'm doing are pretty much what I've done already, but I'm not really paying too much attention. I'm sort of like just doing, okay, yeah, click quest, I accept, go to here, get this, do this, do, you know, just doing all the bits I'm supposed to, and then just sort of, you know, skipping all the dialogue because it's so pointless and worthless. To what's going on that isn't drawing my attention in enough. But yeah, it's a very fun game, and I am, you know, I'm enjoying it lots. But yeah, so I do like my second character that I've made. It's, you know, it's just as fun, but it's weird. I mean, I'll probably get more into. I mean, I do feel a bit. It's weird because I'm sort of having flashbacks to when I played 11 because I made a couple of characters because I wasn't happy with how they were, and then basically I just lost interest. And that's what's worrying me is the fact that I've made a second character now who I like, who's, you know, it's basically going to be a black mage, and I chose that one because literally I don't really want to do a lot of work in this game. I just want to sort of. I wanted something that I could use my my controller with. You know, I can just sort of sit here and basically just, you know, press the shoulder buttons to call up the hotkeys, and then, okay, yep, fire, ice, you know, whatever, and then just pull off the attacks and take out the enemies. That's all I really want to do. I mean, as a black mage, from what I've been looking at the moves and spells and stuff, I mean, he knows the basic spell. The black mage knows, like, protect and sleep, which are probably going to be a couple of the main ones to use against enemies. And then it's just the elemental stuff, which, you know, is fine. It's literally just a quick button press and, you know, change your targets. And it's just sort of, I wanted an easier job, basically, which is why I chose to be, you know, I want to be the Black Mage class when I get to that high enough level to get the crystal, which unlocks the next job. And, you know, I mean, I've got to do other stuff as well, because I'm looking up, I've got to get my archer character. Because I literally, I mean, I'm not as far as I was when I made my first character. I'm sort of nearly there. But I'm just sort of having fun with this and just doing bits and pieces. I mean, even though I've unlocked, I am playing as the Thermitage in, what the fuck is it, Uldar? Yeah, the main city of Uldar. I haven't actually gone around to the rest of the city until, like, unless, you know, the other jobs and crafting stuff yet. I'm still just leveling up my character. I mean, I was leveling up my character from 12 to 15 sort of last night and this morning. I want to try and get it to level 18 before I actually bother doing any more stuff, but I'm sort of trying to do my hunting logs, which are quite fun. And, you know, as I say, I need to unlock the other jobs and other crafting jobs as well. So there's tons of stuff to do, and I'm off work next week, so I'll be literally just sitting here playing this game for a whole week of, you know, pretty much not playing anything else. But I mean, I've got what the fuck is it, Dying Light's coming out next week over here as a box copy, so I've got that to pick up as well, so I'll be playing some of that. I know I've got my Final Fantasy event, so there's tons of stuff to do Final Fantasy wise. You know, there's just tons of stuff coming up, basically, and it just really excites me. But yeah, I'm still playing Final Fantasy, still having lots and lots of fun with it. I'm not sure what to say, really. I mean, I'm looking forward to, as well, when I am off, we're supposed to be getting the 2.51 patch, which gives us the Golden Saucer, basically the big casino-type thing that was in Final Fantasy VII with Chocobo Racing. So I'm going to do, hopefully make some videos, basically just me recording footage from my PlayStation 4 while playing Final Fantasy, and I'll just chuck it up on the old Facebook page for the show, so you'll get to see bits and pieces. And, you know, as it's a simple enough thing to do, I could just sort of, you know, put it on my Facebook page and just share it to the show's Facebook page. But yeah, I say Final Fantasy 14, I love my new character, and it's basically, I just want to do a lot of, not a lot of work, but get a lot of rewards from it, really. I mean, I have been sent, like, Link Shell request. I think, what the hell are they called? Not Link Shells. Damn it. Like, sort of to join a group, like a guild or sort of thing. But, I mean, it's weird. I mean, I've watched so much of Sword Art Online. I just feel like all I want to do the whole game is just be a solo player. But, I mean, I'll wait for to join the I can't even think what it's called. The basic guild later in the game. once I've got through most of the main story stuff and I've done some duties and, you know, other bits and pieces, and there's tons of stuff I still need to learn. But I am just having so much fun with it at the moment. I just want to keep playing and playing and playing, which is why I was up about 4:30 this morning, playing for about 2 or 3 hours before I even came to work. But yeah, I say Final Fantasy 14 has literally got my whole attention at the moment. And I say, which is good, because there's nothing really on my radar that I actually want to pick up over the next couple of weeks. I mean, yes, Dying Light is coming out. I mean, yes, there's at least one game a month now. We've got like Mortal Kombat, Batman, some other bits and pieces here and there. But now I have something to basically bridge the gap between playing stuff and not playing anything at all. And I'm quite happy with it, really. It is really, really good. Yeah, that's pretty much all I've been playing, so that's pretty much knocks that on the head for the moment. But yeah, I say this week's topic was going to be last week's, but as I got into so much stuff about what I've been playing, all the new stuff, and because I missed a couple of weeks, so I had a lot of catching up to do and filling you in on the latest information. Yeah, I want to talk about arcades. Now, I don't think I have talked about this. I'm pretty sure I haven't. But yeah, I'm talk about a sort of history of them, like my history with them and my thoughts about where they're going and cultural differences between like Japan, because I know Japan's big with the arcades, whereas sort of us in the West, you know, the UK, America, they're sort of dwindling out over, you know, time and generations. And yeah, it sort of makes me question where they're going, really, and what the future holds for them. I mean, I have been playing, I mean, my earliest memory of playing arcade machines, like my dad would take me to work with him, and he'd do jobs at pubs and clubs and stuff, and they'd have like an arcade machine in the corner, and I'd, you know, sort of bother him for a couple of quid to put in a machine to play for a little bit while he was working. But yeah, I mean, as well, going down to the beach at South End, which is sort of a holiday destination for people who don't know in the UK. It's a bit of a shitty one. It has been in recent years. Very overpriced as well. But yeah, I mean, they have a big whole seafront there where there's tons of arcades filled with machines. I mean, that's the thing. I haven't been there in a couple of years, but even when I was there a few years back, the actual machines themselves were very, well, very dated, should we say. I mean, there's literally, I mean, they still had like the original Time Crisis, Time Crisis 2, that sort of stuff we're talking about. Even some of the old classic Jurassic Park arcade games in there. But yeah, I had loads of fun just, you know, playing arcade machines growing up, and then it sort of changes with it's hard to explain, because I mean I think about stuff, all these movies that we get. I mean, sort of Hackers, there was an arcade stuff in there, and The Wiz, can't even think of the film. I know we did a bit of the movies on it, me and Matty did, with the old Power Glove. But yeah, I think about their future. I mean, and as I said last week, we've got the new Pokken Fighters, the Tekken-style Pokemon game, where, you know, you can beat the shit out of each other's Pokemon. But that's hitting Japan in a couple of weeks, and it just makes me wonder what the difference between how things have been over the past 10, 20 years. I mean, why have things changed between how you get in Japan, where arcades are still flourishing, and, you know, it's basically a sort of breakdown of the whole gaming market, whereas, you know, the UK over here, I mean, I have, you know, I used to work in a city in London, and there was a bunch of arcades there that I'd sort of, you know, frequent during, you know, off times from work and that, and there'd be a couple, you know, House of the Dead, LA Machine Guns, and a bunch of other stuff like that. But there's just a, I don't know. I think it's as the times have changed and consoles have gotten better, really. I mean, as, obviously, as, you know, things progress, things get better and better and better. Where we have, you know, games, say, like, you know, think about stuff like Silent Scope, Time Crisis, classic arcade games that were brought to home console. And you go to stuff like now where you can play Time Crisis, you know, and Silent Scope on PlayStation 2 and Xbox Ones. The original Xbox. And over time, it was like we've got these games that have come to, been ported to home consoles. I think it was called Ninja Assault, which I used to love that game. That game was great. It was a light gun game as well. And there's Police 24/7, another great game where you'd sort of be in a sort of, the fuck is it? Like a doorway type device, and it would read your movements. So basically you'd move. It's weird, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm sort of moving as I go, talking on the microphone. It's not really doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But no, you sort of move left to right and duck down and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it just sort of, as consoles have gotten better and better, the quality of games that we are getting from these arcade machines has dwindled, basically. Or the fact that they're not needed anymore because we do have consoles indoors. Basically, it's sort of the money situation. It's like, why should we put, you know, a pound, 50 cents? I'm not sure what, you know, I've never been to an American arcade, so I'm not too sure what you'd use, or, you know, Dave and Buster's use tokens or whatever. But it does make me wonder. It's like, well, things have, you know, how could arcades keep increasing their... I've got several thoughts popping in my head at the moment. I'm thinking about, you've got the retro arcades where you play some of the older stuff, that maybe there's like a swap in the generational gameplay. I mean, let me pose this for an example. I mean, if we go back 10 years ago and you've got like Silent Scope that you can play on, you know, in an arcade, right? And as I said, you know, it came to the PlayStation 2, because I know I picked it up on the PlayStation 2. And then as we move forward to consoles, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, you can't play Silent Scope on the current consoles because it's not ported across. Whereas, you know, as we are getting these days with current consoles, you know, classic, like, you know, with the PlayStation 3, you could get a load of PlayStation 2 games. PlayStation 4, we're getting a load of PlayStation 3 games and a couple of PlayStation 2, you know, bits and pieces, stuff like that. But arcades, I mean, some of the arcades you can still go and still play Silent Scope, is it's like a sort of fond memory of, okay, I used to play this when I was younger, you know, great game, had lots of fun with it, that sort of stuff. But with, I mean, yeah, that's fine to look at, but there's, I mean, maybe that's what they are. They've just sort of transitioned from being something we enjoyed as a kid, like the arcades, you know, we enjoyed playing in them as kids, and then when it got to the console generation, console technology rather, not generation as such, console technology got further in, you know, graphics, fun had with them, you know, gameplay, that sort of stuff, it got better than what we were playing in the arcades. And the fact that we had consoles ourselves, so we didn't have to go to these places and put money in every Saturday, Sunday, you know, after school, before school. Now we have, you know, we have our Xbox Ones, we have our PlayStation 4s, we have our Wii U's, we have our Wii's, we have our, you know, 3DS's, PSP's, I think, you know. But it does make me think that, you know, even though we've gone past that with the arcades, they've gone past that specific point in our gaming history, whereas yes, they were something we enjoyed, but then when it became sort of current, when home console stuff was thriving, I think about the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, Xbox, you know, N64, GameCube, all these sort of consoles that we've had for the past 10, 15 years have surpassed what we've been getting in the arcades and beating them superiorly on basically the games that we are playing. You know, trying to play something like Mass Effect in an arcade wouldn't work. That sort of stuff I'm talking about. Whereas the quick action response games, we got a lot of light gun games, we got your basic football stuff, various sports games. I'm just trying to think of other stuff I've seen in the arcades. Where you get movie tie-in stuff. I mean, I played like, you know, Area 51, even though it wasn't a movie tie-in game, but, you know, stuff like I'm thinking about, Area 51... I've played some Alien games, you know, Alien Black thing with the acid in the mouth, and you know what I'm talking about. But just sort of how that changes from what we are, what we have, and the fact that I think about other stuff. I mean, I played Initial D, based on the old Japanese manga, the kid with the driving with the car and stuff. I mean that game was great. It was really fun, but it was one of those sort of card games where you basically not card as in, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh, you know, Snap, what, you know, that sort of stuff. But it was like you could put you know, pay to play, and then you'd get like a card, and it would keep your data from how your car. It was one of those ones, because basically the more you played, the more you raced, you could earn in-game money or points or whatever to upgrade the car that you were driving. You start the game and you choose a car, and it's all printed out on this card, and then basically every time you want to play, you put the card in. Whereas that was what made that thing, sort of thing, was made obsolete by consoles. You know, there was no need to go every weekend or whenever to play, say, Initial D, put your card in, put more money in to up, you know, to do this sort of stuff. When you've got games these days that have basically surpassed what you could do with the arcade stuff by doing it themselves. You have, like, you know, you have your Forza, your Gran Turismo, Drive Club, you know, Need for Speed, you know, where you can just sort of play here, you know, sit on your home console stuff and play these games and, you know, enjoy the benefit of what you're playing and do basically the stuff that you could do in the arcade and not have to pay exorbitant amount of money just to keep up with how it's going. Whereas you're playing this on your, say, on your own as such, and you can just keep going and going and going. But it's one of those weird. I sort of like talking about this. It's, I know I'm sort of rambling all over the place as I usually do, but it does make me think, literally, multiple things at once about the future of gaming with the arcades. Are they going to die out? I mean, I've still got more of this topic. I haven't finished it. I'm still sort of halfway through what I'm trying to get at. But it makes me wonder about, you know, how things are in Japan with the fact that mobile gaming is taking off. They still have the same appreciation for gaming that we do, and they still have the same. They might have the same mindset for how games work. Whereas, you know, arcades are still big out there more than they are in the Western world. But it makes me wonder why. When I don't know, some random thought in my head is about, okay, the size of the houses. Because there's literally, I mean, it's a very tight-knit area from what I've seen from various, you know, movies and documentaries and stuff about how everything's sort of closed together and, you know, how family life is. And they don't have room for a console, but maybe that's just the custom. I mean, there's a big thing in Japan about, you know, adopting Western culture and, you know, through the ages and, you know, how that's changed how they've developed as a nation and people. And, you know, it makes me wonder why they haven't adopted our way of thinking, or, you know, or being, rather. It confuses me a little bit, because everyone's got room for a console. I mean, consoles are getting, well, they're not exactly super big, they're not super 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 small. But say if you've got a telly in your house, you've got literally space for a console. I mean, I'm just looking at my telly and TV stand that's literally got three consoles sitting on it right now, and it's like, well, you know, they're not exactly super big, but they're not exactly super small, so there's plenty of space. But it's like, well, what keeps Japanese gamers, you know, glued to their basic handheld mobile devices, 3DSs, PSPs, and in the arcades, whereas, you know, you could buy yourself a console and not have to deal with the fact that you're putting more money into consoles to play these games. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not saying there's not. It just sort of makes me wonder. It's like, well, the money aspect of doing that sort of thing. We, you know, you could put this money into an arcade machine, or you could basically just save your money and, you know, just buy yourself a console, or, you know, more stuff into, I'm just trying to think now. Put more money into, into, you know, mobile gaming, you know, buy yourself whatever game you wanted to get. It does make me wonder. I mean, I have this article here that I got from Game Revolution. It says, arcades... God, one second. There we go. Little pop-up. It says, arcades are dead in the US for good. The arcade is dead. This is not news to anyone. Anyone in the US. But apparently, and lucky for us, as all the gamers, the Japanese never got that memo. because they're everywhere in Tokyo, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Because here in the land of Uncle Sam, the local hangout arcade has died a painful, painful death as a result of the changing times. Back in their heyday, arcades were everything a casual player could want. A buffet of different titles, clumpings of the same game, so everyone can have a turn. Usually thumping of 80s pop rock in the background. Yeah, I mean, as I say, you know, I'm thinking now as I talk about this, Terminator 2, the arcades, you know, it was supposed to be set, was it 90s, but I don't know. But yeah, tons of arcade, you know, Afterburner, all that sort of stuff. Basically, all the games that we wanted were made available to us at a cost that wasn't, you know, I don't know. It's weird. There's got to be some sort of bridging gap, which are probably explained in this thing that I'm reading about what's changed between, you know, America, UK, and Japan, where, you know, they really didn't get the memo about the cost of what it is to, you know, to play these games, where you can get yourself a console and play it yourself, really. You know, yeah, in the background, maybe a crowd around one kid who was really, really good at Pac-Man or Donkey Kong. Get that image in your head, a guy with a flock of seagulls haircut, really into his turn at the Galaga machine, and three other of his friends cheering him on with their own quarters at the ready. I mean, I'm just having sort of memories now. I mean, I wasn't at this one, but I was told about it. I was on a camping trip. God, where the fuck did I go? I can't even, literally, I mean, it's not important. But yeah, I was on a camping trip once, years and 10, 12, 13, 15 years ago, and there was the Simpsons arcade game. Bunch of people I went with were in the arcade, and they went through the whole game. There was people around them cheering. I mean, I heard about this like secondhand knowledge, but, you know, that still happened 10, 15 years ago when, you know, that game was in the arcades. Now we can download it onto our consoles and onto our phones and, you know, but I'll carry on reading. It's funny that I'm even talking about this when I think of the next generation of gamer. This is, you know, the guys wrote the articles talking. I think of my nephew, he's just about to turn 14, aside from a bowling alley and a Chuck E. Cheese restaurant. sounds really weird for me to say that. He's never been to an arcade. Dave and Buster's? Not what I think of a real arcade. I'm in the UK, and even I know Dave and Buster's. Not what I think of a real arcade anyway. Today's arcades are usually a collection of cabs in an adjacent room from the main dining area somewhere. He has the Xbox Live Arcade to play old games and play in the comfort of home, where he can yell at idiots he might be playing Call of Duty with. But what happened to the arcade? What brought the US arcade game market down with a thunderous crash and making old farts like me at the ripe old age of 26 whine and moan for the days of old smoky rooms, eye strain, and outdated games? Yeah, I mean, I was really excited when we had on the Xbox the Xbox arcade thing they tried, where you could play, you know, you set up your own arcade room and you'd have your old arcade games. Because I was hoping we'd get access to stuff like Sunset Riders, which is awesome arcade game. Now, as I listen to all of you lot listening, go and look on YouTube, look at Sunset Riders. The game was fucking awesome. Cowboy game, sort of side-scrolling, shoot 'em up, literally, and really good fun. I was hoping we were going to get that, but we didn't. I would love that to come out on something that's I can play it on, because it was a really good game and really fun. I mean, same as the Terminator 2 game that was had a gun, light gun involved with that. I mean, I played that in the arcade and had that for home console as well. I think I had that on my PlayStation, I think. Two major factors have kept US rooms from opening doors again. The first is that players, let's be honest, are primarily attracted by graphics. Back in the 80s, if you wanted to see some great visuals, and the newest games, you ventured out into the world looking for them. If a new game came out, chances were good that it was either in the arcade first or simply exclusive there before, because no home console would handle them at the right performance level. Because, you know, technology the way it was, you know, you had to have a big giant cabinet to run this sort of stuff, whereas now we have a tiny little box. Pac-Man for the 2600 is a perfect example of this. The arcade version was the full experience, while the home port was, well, ugly, flickering, and dreadful. And if I just scroll down. Yeah, the second factor is an offshoot of the first. While the home ports got better over the years, the arcade was unable to keep their edge in graphics, gameplay, and or depth. Also, with games on home console exploring new genres possibilities, the arcade scene started to stagnate. The only edge they might have had in later years was their special arcade-only controllers. Races like Gran Turismo might have had the market cornered on realism, but as far as controller games like Daytona USA and Hydro Thunder, and also Cruising USA, I love that game, a racing arcade cockpit would really bring a player into the experience. Still, once racing wheels were available to home to the market of to the market for some of those games, including a wheel for the N64 that could be used to control the faithful port of Hydro Thunder, there was no reason to go out and play him. Exactly. That's what I mean. As I say, it never occurred to me when I was thinking about this topic that I could bring up the actual console, the actual devices. You know, steering wheel. I'm thinking of there's a picture of Street Fighter here. You know, the control arcade stick, which I had one, but I never used it because it was just awkward, really. To make matters worse for the arcade operators and cabinet repair people over the past decade, the internet has changed the world of gaming further. Up until around 2000 and the launch of the Dreamcast, the only ways to play with your friends were to invite them over or to get up and walk drive to the cab carrier of your choice. With the rise in internet speeds, drops in price to connect, and the quality of games rising, the true online play has become a reality and pounded yet another nail into the already sealed coffin. Why go out when you can outscore and pwn your friends on the couch? Or another way of looking at it is who nowadays would be willing to go to an arcade and risking looking like a noob on a DDR pad? Exactly. Or face the local champion in Street Fighter 4. I mean, one of the arcades I went to when I used to work in London, it was the whole, you were playing against someone not next to you, but like across from you, so you never know who you're playing against. But that sort of stuff. But I don't know. Still, there have been exceptions to those three factors, especially in recent years. There was a small resurgence of existing arcade making some coin. Oh, sorry, existing arcades making some coin again with the US release of Dance Dance Revolution, the phenomenal rhythm game launched by Konami in the later years of the PlayStation 1. In Japan, new breeds of arcade-only experiences are available. Players' game enjoy mech games in gigantic pods with big control panels. Mahjong speciality games are dropped into the random corners for some added currency. Even football games are available, packs of card simulators to e-readers. Games back in the GBA heydays. All of these, along with a classic across the cab play of Street Fighter, one-on-one back in 2008. One of my favourite memories is the Land of the Rising Sun that kept dark, smoky lit rooms where the US counterparts sank into gaming quicksand. Will we ever have arcades here again? I seriously doubt it. It's just a part of the passage of time. For US gamers, sad as it might be for some of us. There are conventions like the recent Classic Gaming Expo in Las Vegas together with the minds like-minded lovers of the good old days, but otherwise we regulate to the corners of bars, specialty places like Dave and Buster's, Chuck E. Cheese, and the occasional Stubble Bastard with a handful of cabinets and some more money than sense, trying to regain some of what they loved long ago. One lonesome token at a time. He says, I do implore you, enjoy those games no matter how you do it. If you play Sinister while at the local laundromat or toss a quarter for a round of Street Fighter 2 in your neighbourhood run-down liquor store, like I've done, even if you manage to find one of the sparsely populated homegrown arcades struggling out of the middle of nowhere, have fun with the game. The experience gathering with a crowd of crazy gamers might be gone, but the games are still here. And they're still fun as hell. As for my nephew, he might love the new stuff, but there's also a lot of games of Double Dragon left in him. Yeah, exactly. That's my thing. That's what I'm looking at these days. It's like we've gone past that where you know, as it says in the article there, you know, we'd, you go back 15 years and yes, you'd be playing Pac-Man, Afterburner, Hydro Thunder, that sort of stuff in the arcade because they would be current games, the graphics would be great, whereas compared to the home console market, basically stuff couldn't cut it against what we were playing in the arcades. But then as the actual home console market got better, the graphics got better, the gameplay got better, that sort of stuff, and we had, your own steering wheel, think about Steel Battalion now, the big old controller for that. You know, there was no need to actually go to the arcades to play this sort of stuff. We could, you know, stay indoors and do it. But there could be a thriving I heard about some other places in Las Vegas. There's like some sort of gaming place where, you know, they've got a load of classic stuff. I mean, that's what it's going to be now. They sort of, I don't know if jump the shark is the perfect term to use. It's sort of, it's jumped, I mean, arcades have jumped through time, I would say. They're not relevant because basically the stuff we're playing now is better and better. You know, I mean, trying to play Mass Effect in the arcades, Grand Theft Auto, that sort of stuff. But you could fill an arcade place with, an arcade with classic games that we'd play, you know, Time Crisis, Silence, you know, all the basic ones I've named, like, you know, Hydro Thunder, Cruising USA, Terminator, you know, the Star Wars arcade game, which I loved, you know, the on-rails shooter and, you know, lightsaber fight one. You could put all these games in an arcade and it wouldn't be bad, but it would make a lot of people happy. You know, so Mortal Kombat can be added to that as well. It bringing a lot of nostalgia and happy feelings about what we've played. And, you know, okay, it was, I remember this when I was such and such age. I remember this, you know, going to these places who still have these machines working. It brings back a great nostalgia for what we've played and what we've seen. I think that's the only way it could go, to be honest, with what's going on with arcades these days. I mean, they are pretty much dying out. I mean, very soon. I mean, apart from, I guess, in the seafronts and various other places that still have them. I can't see that. I mean, we'll say about, you know, the sort of convenience stores that do have the arcade machine in the corner, that sort of stuff. I mean, when that thing breaks, I mean, they're probably just going to chuck it out anyway, so it will be gone. I mean, 10, 15 years to time, we'll throw in less and less of these machines, less people making these machines, apart from, you know, stuff that we get from Japan. But it's sad to say that, you know, pretty much it is dead. But it does make you wonder why, you know, why is it still going on in Japan at the moment and not, you know, I don't know, maybe it's just the time and effort and I don't know. But I mean, I do have loads of fond memories with, arcade machines. You know, I mean, when I sort of, not would bunk off school, but, you know, during lunch break, there was I'm not even sure what the hell place is sold, actually. I think it was like just a sweet shop or something. We had like a kebab shop around the corner, like fish and chips and stuff. And right next to it was like a news agent, I'm guessing it was. I'm just trying to remember now. And they had like, the place isn't there anymore. It's been changed several hands. I'm going back 15 years. And they would have like arcade machines. There was like a pool table in there. And we'd play classics like, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom 2. You know, Mortal Kombat and all the classic arcade stuff. Not like the big flashy stuff, but, you know, decent size. I'm just trying to think, you know, as I say, the stand-up cabinets with, you know, basic just joystick and button stuff. You know, like, as I say, like Marvel vs. Capcom 2. But, yeah, these places are pretty much dead and buried over here and I'm guessing in the States. So Dave and Buster's, Chuck E. Cheese, they're the only places that are left to buy. I mean, I think there's a bunch of arcades and stuff in Disney when I was there about 6 years ago in Florida. But, I mean, if you think about films like The Last Starfighter, based on an arcade game, some sort of kid at Trailer Park, a little J.J. Stoner sort of, you know, plays this arcade game, gets really good, then picked up to be, you know, a starfighter pilot and, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad because it's sort of part of our childhood. I mean, I'm at the age where, you know, I remember arcades, and you know, you think about stuff now these days, you know, people 10, 15 years younger than me, who will only know of games that they've played on their consoles, not actually going to places on a Saturday with your mates, you know, and putting dollars and pound coins into, you know, machines that play Mortal Kombat, or, you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of sad, actually. You know, it's the death. It's the death of a gaming arm, really. That's part of our culture. You know, something that won't be forgotten. You know, I mean, oh, will it? I wonder. I mean, I'm just thinking now about the fact that, as I say, as I'm getting older, and you know, generations are changing, but how we play games. And I think about all the big sites like IGN and Joystick and, you know, Kotaku, and, you know, all those people. It's like, well, you know, 10, 15 years on, when the writers have moved on and they get younger and writers in, they're not going to have the same experience that we've had when it came to console gaming and arcade gaming. Their views on things can be totally different to how we saw things and how we experienced stuff. And it's like, well, we're losing a part of our history, which is probably why that, you know, arcades should be still be around, but maybe have the older arcade games just for nostalgic value. But even that, how long will that nostalgia last? Until the machines stop working? Until they break? Possibly. But I mean, it's weird. I'm just having thoughts now. Maybe there could be some sort of giant, you know, we had the E.T. for the Atari, the whole sort of mountain of games buried in the desert. Are we going to get that with arcade games? Is there going to be like some giant hole in the desert where there's literally tons of arcade machines buried because they're all broken? Possibly, maybe. You know, we're never going to play Qubit again. And I don't know. I just think about so many good games that I played. I mean, I remember back 20 years ago, I think it was on holiday in Crete, hotel I stayed at, great place, great games room with, like, they had the G.I. Joe arcade game, they had Wonder Boy in Monster Land, which I think I got on my 360, they had Double Dragon 2, you know, it's weird. I mean, I used to be, you know, I used to be really good at Double Dragon years and years ago, and then just over time, I think as games have gotten easier and changed how we play them, and you know, it's just thinking now about have games have gotten easier because we don't have to pay to put them, you know, to pay to play. Whereas, you know, in the arcades, it was pay to play because the games were hard. Whereas games are easier now, we're getting through them so quickly because we need to buy more games. But if they were so hard. Yeah, if they were so hard, we wouldn't need to keep playing on them because, yeah, if they were easy, we just, you know, if they weren't hard, we would just be stuck on these one game. Whereas if they make it easier, we just plow right through them. But yeah, I mean, the arcade, there was some sort of top-down screen table football thing that we've played. Just trying to think what else. God, there were so many other decent games in there. But yeah, I mean, I just think about all these other ones, you know, Outrun, Afterburner, you know, God, I'm just racking my brain now trying to think of arcade games that I played. But yeah, it seems so bad that this sort of the you know, the death of gaming history. I mean, you know, what are people in their 20s? You know, I think as I say, at my age now, I'm probably like the last nostalgic person. There is, really. I mean, you think about people in their mid-20s, early 20s, they're not going to have the same sort of knowledge of arcade machine. You know, kids who grew up in the 90s, late 90s, you know, early 2000s, they just won't know about all this sort of stuff that we do. And it's kind of sad. But maybe that there could be some sort of... It makes me wonder, right? I'm just sort of thinking now. Maybe there was one company that just did had their own, you know, as I say, as brands of an arcade brand. You know, we know of Dave of Buster's and we know of Chuck E. Cheese and all that sort of stuff. There was some sort of arcade brand that did sort of retro gaming, and they just basically had a whole bunch of arcades across America, UK, most of Europe, whatever. and they just played, you know, they had machines set up with, you know, the original House of the Dead, Time Crisis, you know, stuff like that. I mean, there's some stuff that I can play on consoles. On arcades that I couldn't get on consoles. I mean, I know I've played House of the Dead 4 on the arcade with, I think it was 3 that had a machine gun. I think it was 4 that used a shotgun. Either one, anyway. But it's like, well, I don't know if I can get those games onto a console. Probably could if I look for it. But as I say, I'm doing a show tonight, so I can't really spend the time to look. But yeah, it's like, just want some brand that did retro arcades where there was all these machines, they were all well kept. I mean, you look at and say about stuff like Wreck-It Ralph, that movie, set in an arcade with the machines and everything. And that basically, that's a perfect film to sort of look into this nostalgia of games and, you know, God, I haven't seen that film in a couple of years. I need to watch that. But yeah, I think about stuff like that. It's like, you know, it's not exactly passing on the torch of gaming, but torch is being extinguished. It's really sad to really talk about this. I'm sort of feeling down now, actually. But, I mean, it's bad to see that arcades will be going away soon. Even as slowly as they're disappearing, well, as quickly as they're disappearing now, rather. But, you know, people won't have the same nostalgic memories that, you know, me and a bunch of other people on the station will have. But, yeah, it's just, it is really, really sad. Yeah, jeez. But, I mean, Japan still keeps it going, even though, you know, it's dying out over here and in America. Japan keeps it going for, I'm guessing, until basically they sort of, as I say in that article, you know, get the memo about, you know, you could buy yourself a console. You don't need to keep spending money on this sort of stuff. And these games now aren't, you know, I don't know. That just makes me wonder. It's like, well, with PC gaming and, with PC gaming, you can always upgrade your rig and have better and better graphics cards and sound cards and that sort of stuff. And there's always stuff being developed for it. Why isn't there something like that for arcades? Why hasn't the arcade machines moved with the times and, you know, benefited themselves by having up-to-date graphics, up-to-date gameplay? I mean, maybe it just wouldn't make any money. I'm just trying to think now. I mean, I'd go to the arcades and still play stuff. I mean, I was just trying to think now, when was the last time I went to a fucking arcade? Must be nearly 10 years anyway. No, it's got to be less than that. It's about 3 or 4 years, probably. Last time I was in London, you know, actually sort of dossing around for a day. But yeah, I mean, nothing's to stop, you know, the people who make these games for the arcades, you know, keep them on track with how games are these days, you know. Maybe they just wouldn't make any most ways, so don't bother, but you don't know unless you try. And I say, Japan, still doing it. I mean, Pokken Fighters, a bunch of other stuff that they've got, you know, the Mahjong games that I was describing that I read in the article. It's just one of those things. It's like, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things. It's like, well, why hasn't it evolved to keep up with, you know, why hasn't it sort of tried to run alongside console gaming and give them a proper challenge? Whereas you've got to look at games these days, various sporting genres, where there are several games based on the whole thing, where, you know, you have your, your Pro Evolution and your FIFA going up against each other to see which one's better. Why hasn't the arcade market sort of, you know, pulled their finger out and said, well, let's make something to get people in the arcades again? But I think it's just the overwhelming dominance of the actual console gaming market has ground that into the dust. But as I say, I think about Japan again, and literally they just haven't got the memo yet, really. But yeah, I just think it's such a shame. I mean, I do love an arcade. But yeah, I mean, as I say, when I do go to arcades, I will, I mean, I'll have to probably look at this after the show, sort of look up for a sort of retro-style arcades. You know, I mean, I go to these places and I want to play some of the classic stuff that I'd love to find a place that did Silent Scope, the original Time Crisis. I wonder if I could still get past where I got to. I mean, I've beat Time Crisis 1, 2, 3. I don't think I have. I've seen four, but I don't think I had any money to play it. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those weird things. Sort of times change, people move on, but yeah, I mean, a sort of retro style arcade would be great. I mean, as I say, there's games that there was an era in gaming where we could play stuff like, say, like, you know, Cruising USA, Cruising World. I mean, one of the cinemas a few towns over from where I live now, they had a Cruising USA machine in the sort of reception, not reception area, sort of lobby area where you could buy your tickets. You know, cinemas these days, I mean, cinemas, there's a few arcade machines that I know of. You know, one a few miles away from me, there's an arcade in there. I mean, I know I went to the cinema with Hammy last year to see Guardians of the Galaxy. I think I must have seen an arcade machines in there. Yeah. I mean, they're not exactly super dying, but I don't know. It's just one of those nostalgia retro things that we're feeling that, you know, will come and go. Yeah, I mean, I say I will always have a fondness, whether it does die out completely or there is some sort of rejuvenated spark that gets people into arcades or people putting more arcades up for people to play, that, you know, I will always love to play these games and, you know, take some time out of whatever I'm doing to find these places. And I'm going to have to do that. Try and find, you know, go on the internet and do some searches and find sort of, you know, arcades to go to. I mean, I know there's several in London that I can go to and various cinemas round me that I could go to, but newer places that I haven't visited. You know, I mean, I do like travelling and going to new places. And I mean, there's this gaming bar that I'm going to for the Final Fantasy event is going to be nice. Maybe there's places around there that have arcades, you know. I don't know. It's something I'll find out. But yeah, that's pretty much it for the topic for this week. I actually got further into it than I thought. I thought I'd only be on it for a few minutes. But yeah, I did a good amount of talking on it, to be honest. But yeah, I think it's pretty much time for a quick break at the moment. But yeah, when I come back, I'll have a whole shit ton of news for you and usual, you know, ramblings from me. A bunch of good stuff to read. I've got tons of stuff to talk about, so I'll probably speed room for the whole lot. But yes, so keep listening. I will be back in about 9-10 minutes after these messages.
That combination and Ashley, you're from England, so we're not really sure what asshole number you would be. We just know it would be at least two extra numbers and one extra dash.
Yeah,
that's all we know for sure. Yeah. It's some sort of country code.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to have a go.
If you'd like to Skype in, it's Antisocial Gamer Radio. All one word.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
The Conti and Kenny Show.
Well, that's where they started, yeah. But a priest biting another priest ear off?
Colorado Dickens said, did you see the dude in Texas who beat the minister to death with an electric guitar? You hear about that?
An electric? What, do they have a slide guitar down there? They don't have electric guitars down there?
It was Monsignor Hendrix who did it.
Wow.
I just made that up.
We did.
Thanks, Colorado Dickens.
Father Clapton. Goes ape shit.
Brother Becht.
Friar Ray Vaughan goes ape shit in church. Now that's a big news.
Rabbi Little Richards.
That's where we go with Keith Richards.
Father Van Halen. Yeah, very nice. Yeah, Eddie Van Halo.
The Conti and Kenny Show, Monday nights, 7 to 10 on morelikeradio.com.
Hey smokers, you stink worse than a dumpster. Stop living in the Middle Ages and try an electronic cigarette today by Smokeless Image. Just go to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke. They're cheaper than regular cigarettes, don't smell, and come in a variety of flavors like fruit, mint, and traditional tobacco flavors. Order your new electronic cigarettes from Smokeless Image today by going to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke. That's tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke.
Yeah, we can't sell Betsy's milk to nobody. Absolutely nobody.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
You can't sell that milk.
Why is that? Like, I can't sell that.
I got pain. It's all I have. Yo, I got pain.
I'm
gonna smell it. Dude fucking takes the bread, shoves it in her ass, shits it back out, puts it in the case. That's how you wrap the bread. You can jiggle your fist around in there without hitting the sides.
The Orange Room, 9 to 11, Saturday nights on Warlike Radio.
If you're sick and tired of getting pro wrestling only after it's gone through the PG filter, then it's time you were introduced to Combat Zone Wrestling. Celebrating 15 years of ultra-violence, Combat Zone Wrestling will give you all the high-stakes, high-flying, and hard-hitting pro wrestling you can handle. Check out their live event schedule, get information on their next iPay-per-view, skim the roster, or shop for CZW merch right now at czwrestling.com. That's czwrestling.com. No dance segments, no endless talk of downloading apps, just wrestling. Combat Zone Wrestling, the ultra-violent underground.
The Elvis and Alfred Show, Thursdays, morelikeradio.com, 5 to 7. I'm Elvis Cage.
I'm Alfred.
I'm Jameson, and on the phone...
It's Bill. I'm phoning it in.
Oh, he's phoning it in. Coming to you live from the Halfpenny Pub in Sayville.
That's right. Punk rock music.
Independent music.
And all the rest of the things that we speak about.
Crazy party stuff.
Yeah. Here on morelikeradio.com.
And elvisandalfred.com, 24-7.
Yarr!
The Elvis and Alfred Show.
Listen to More Like Radio every Tuesday night for the answer to this question that's on everybody's lips.
What does the drunk say?
I'm on your fuck. Oof. Ah!
What the drunk say?
I'm not one that judges penises. Blah, 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 blah. I can't understand what the...
What does the drunk say?
Do it in a bourbon barrel. I am all over the goddamn place, okay. Oh, let me, excuse me,
What the drunk say?
I will fucking do that. I think that's enough of the racism there. Okay.
What does the drunk say?
Alcohol by Volume, Tuesdays 6 to 8 p.m. only on morelikeradio.com.
If you weren't able to catch the last Hippo Juice show, here's what you probably missed.
I just keep thinking to myself, and it makes me giggle, that every time I hear the story, I imagine it was Ray Romano in the same situation.
Oh.
Oh, Deborah. Oh,
kind of does.
I barely touched her. Come on. Oh. Oh, it was my brother. Look at him. He's bigger than me. Come on. Oh, come on, everybody loves me. I got twins. Come on. Oh, let's go Home Depot. Come on.
Fess up, Raymond. You know it was you. They got you on video.
Anybody want soup?
Ma, come on. We're talking over here. Oh, man. I'm dying.
So if you learn anything from Hippo Juice, remember, Ray Romano allegedly punched his wife in an elevator.
Right.
We don't report the news accurately. We report half of it. Whatever. It's still news, so fuck you guys. This is more entertaining than some football player.
Listen to the Hippo Juice show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. on morelikeradio.com.
What kind of store only has one thing on the shelf? Tea Fury does. Now before you complain, listen to how it works. Each day a brand new t-shirt design becomes available for only 24 hours, then it's replaced by a new design the following day. They're all submitted by freelance artists too, so they're completely unique. They come in multiple colors and sizes, and they're all inspired by nerd and geek culture. And for only $11 per shirt, you can't go wrong. Check out today's limited edition design right now at tinyurl.com/MLRTs. Bookmark it and check back daily for new designs at tinyurl.com/MLRTEES.
Hey guys, check out my sweet Chim Pokemon doll.
Please, Chim Pokemon dolls are so last week.
What? Yeah, dude, don't you know? It's all about the Chim Pokemon video game now. Did you bring your special Chim Pokemon game controller? Huh? No.
Oh, you didn't get a special Chim Pokemon game controller. Jesus Christ.
Chim Pokemon, what is primary objective?
To destroy the evil power.
I've got to buy all the Chim Pokemon so I can destroy the evil power.
Damn it.
I've got to buy them all. So first I'd better go to Hawaii and visit Pearl Harbor.
Try to bum the harbor. Ready?
Go. I must buy them all.
We must buy them all.
Try to bum the harbor.
So the video game gave Kenny a seizure. Ew, this game rules.
And welcome back to part two of Antisocial Game Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. Yeah, it was a good actual topic, that was. I enjoyed that. I mean, I'd say I didn't really drag it out, but it was like just so many thoughts about, you know, the future of arcades, where are they going, what's going to happen to them in the future, you know. Yeah, some future, what's going to happen in the future. Double talk there again. But no, I'd say it does make me feel very nostalgic for, you know, playing in them, being part of the arcade experience, as all of you should that have actually been to arcades with your friends or on your own or whatever. And actually been to these places and played machines. You know, you're part of, you know, we're part of a dying era, but we were part of something that, you know, captivated our childhood, you know. It's one of those things. Yes, now we're getting to the new stuff. I've done my little bit of bullshit rambling. This is something which could be good. I don't know. I mean, it might be. Netflix is developing a live-action Legend of Zelda series. I'm hoping this is going to be good. Legend of Zelda is one of the most popular video game series of all time and is in the works as a TV show on Netflix. The video streaming service is in early stages developing a live-action series based on Zelda. An ordinary boy named Link who must raise... This is from the Wall Street Journal, so... If it's blah, 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 baby, baby, I don't understand what the hell's going on talk, you'll understand why, because it's from them. Not, you know, not because it's me reading this shit, but, you know, because of it's the Wall Street Journal, and I don't think a bunch of them people play a lot of games. Who must rescue a princess named Zelda and save a fantasy world called Hyrule? Said a person familiar with the matter. See, told you. Seeks writers to work on the show, Netflix is describing it as a Game of Thrones for a family audience, the person said. The Zelda games have traditionally included swords and sorcery, like Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings, but typically a more light-hearted, kid-friendly tone. Plus, Zelda games have been out way before, you know, any of that sort of stuff, apart from Lord of the Rings, obviously. But before we had Game of Thrones. Netflix is said to be working closely with Nintendo, the Japanese game developer that has made about 20 Legend of Zelda games since the original, which was released in the US in 1987. I just still remember the first advert for that, bloody hell. Nintendo is very protective of its intellectual property and has allowed a few adaptations over the years. An animated Legend of Zelda series ran for just one season in 1989, which I remember. I watched that growing up as a kid, and a 1993 movie based on, yes, the Super Mario Brothers, which was an infamous bomb, which I remember watching that as well. As it still seeks a writer to work on a series, Netflix has a long road to travel before a Legend of Zelda series actually becomes reality. It's also possible that Netflix or Nintendo will kill the project before it gets off the ground. A Netflix spokesperson declined to comment. A Nintendo spokesman said the company doesn't comment on rumours or speculations. So, I mean, I want to say that this could be a good thing, but this could probably be a very bad thing. But, I mean, How do you do a Netflix? How do you do a Zelda Legend of Zelda TV show? I mean, what games would you base it off of? You know, would it be the Minish Cap, Four Swords, you know, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Skyward Sword? You know, where would you pull the information from? Because, I mean, not everyone's, all the Zelda games are different. They're pretty much the same. But, you know, Wind Waker, you know, to name a few of these games, there's so many that you could sort of pull bits and pieces from, or, you know, pull it from all of them, maybe. But, I mean, I would like to see something like this done. I don't know. I want it to work. If it does work, then good. But the way we have with movies these days, there's not many gaming movies actually, well, hardly any. I mean, I like a couple, which will be leading to my next news article. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I want it to work. I want it to be good. But as I say, as a final comment says, this could be completely cancelled. I don't know. We'll wait and see. Give it time. Give it, I don't know, a year. If we still haven't heard about this in a year, then yeah, it'll probably be cancelled or not even going to happen. But I say Netflix is working with Nintendo, so they're going to get the decent, you know, information. But then you've got to think about who the actors they're going to play, who would play Link, what age would you set him at, how old would he be, I mean, who would be Zelda, would you get Zelda dressed up as the various other sort of boy characters that she's played? I don't know. It's one of those things. There's so much stuff that could, you know, happen with this game, and so much information you could pull from, that it could be a, you know, really good thing. But, you know, we'll wait and see. Where is that next article that I was looking at? I had it here. 1 second. God, where the fuck's it gone? I know I clicked on it. Here we go. Yes, got it. This is from Eurogamer. There's a new trailer for the Hitman Agent 47 movie. I'm saying this now. I've watched the trailer and I like it. This looks really good. It's very close to following the actual story of the game, where he's a clone of like some sort of great assassins and, you know, all that sort of menagerie of, you know, it's basically follows very closely to the game. I mean, even though we had a Hitman movie coming out a few years back, nearly 10 years ago actually, with Timothy Olyphant in it, which I actually liked. I thought it was really good. You know, this is another one, and it was pretty good as well. I'll read the article instead of my sort of gushing over how good the first movie was. In my opinion, that is. A new trailer has been released for Hitman Agent 47, the upcoming reboot set to star Homeland's Rupert Friend as your favourite bald assassin. Even though he's not completely bald in this, he still has a bit of hair. The film's The film looks like it will feature some familiar outfit swapping and dual pistol shooting sequences, as well as some wonderfully clunky video game style dialogue. The new footage also includes a look at the characters played by Star Trek Zachary Quinto and Game of Thrones Mance Ryder. Her name is, I'm not sure who she plays. I don't know, whatever, doesn't matter. There's no connection between The Caper and the last Hitman film, which starred Timothy Olyphant, Fast and Furious star. Paul Walker had previously been lined up to take on the part before his untimely death, so something good came out of that. A new video game installment of the series is currently in development for PC and consoles at Hitman Absolution Studios, IO Interactive, although a few details are yet known. Hitman Agent 47 isn't due to be released in. Isn't due to be released in the UK until. Oh, okay, sorry. I was worried for a second. I thought they were trying to do some little pun with the release date. But yeah, it's 28th of August is when we're getting this. If they say, let's hope they're worth wait. And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I like the trailer. But that's the thing with these days. I mean, you put all the good stuff in the trailer, the film could be total bollocks. I don't think I actually saw the Hitman movie, you know, the original one with Timothy in the cinema. I think I must have watched it off the off Sky Movies or some stupid stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I have the DVD and it's really good. I enjoy it. I mean, there's very few gaming movies that I actually enjoy. I mean, I like the original Hitman. I like the first two Resident Evil movies. I like the second one better than the first one because it has a Nemesis in it. But yeah, that's pretty much the only Street Fighter. Street Fighter has some sort of nostalgic value. It's bad, but it's good because it's bad. But I don't know. I haven't seen Street Fighter in ages. I'm hoping it's on Netflix. I'll have to give it a watch. But yeah, I say Hitman movie coming out in August. I'm looking forward to it. I might go to the cinema. I barely go to the cinema at all these days. I mean, the only time I actually, go to see stuff these days is, well, when it's a superhero movie or Star Wars at the end of the year. But I don't know. We'll wait and see. Gearbox is hiring for Borderlands 3. Borderlands 3 isn't in production yet, but Gearbox is definitely is hiring for it. On Twitter, Gearbox chief Randy Pitchford called on developers to apply to work on the next Borderlands game. The tweet came from a following tease during a panel discussion at PAX South a couple of weeks ago. It says, we are recruiting for the next Borderlands. This is the big one. Industry badass, email me. Put his email address. Gearbox has a lot on its plate at the moment, including the first-person MOBA-style game Battleborn. Pitchford added that the Gearbox was all hands on deck making Battleborn. So with Battleborn due out at some point in 2015, but still without a release date, it may be some time before we hear about the next Borderlands. I'm saying 2017. That's probably a bit too far off, but I think maybe that's probably around the time we do hear something. So they're hiring, people for it. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I like Borderlands. Hopefully we get something from it. I don't know. I'm just reading about. Yeah. Meanwhile, sticking with Borderlands, Gearbox announced a new downloadable playable character for Borderlands, the pre-sequel. Lady Aurelia, the Baroness, the sister of Sir Hammerlock, arrives on the 28th of January, so it's out already. Her three skill trees are Huntress, Cold Money, and Contractual Aristocracy. Her Huntress skill tree focuses on sniping, Cold Money focuses on ice damage, and the Contractual Aristocracy allows her to turn a co-op teammate into a servant, earning her bonuses for their kills in addition to her own. That sounds cool. The Lady Hammerlock pack is part of the Borderlands pre-sequel season pass, but will also be sold separately. So we could be getting a... what the hell is it? What am I trying to say? We could be getting Borderlands 3 in the next couple of years. That's going to be good. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I love Borderlands. It's a great game. But I don't know. I don't know. It's weird. I mean, I've heard mixed reviews about the pre-sequel because pretty much it's more of what we've got already and people are okay with that, but more people, it seems, from what I've been hearing, are not, which is a shame because Borderlands is great, but I don't know. Here we go. Some sort of, bad news, I'm guessing. SOE, the Sony Online Entertainment, has been sold off. Can now develop... multi-platform games. Studio rebranded as Daybreak Game Company. Yes, Sony has sold off Sony Online Entertainment to investment management firm Columbus Nova. As such, it will now be rebranded Daybreak Games Company LLC and worry not, for all its current projects will remain in development. So what does this acquisition mean for the newly dubbed Daybreak? Simple. It can start developing multi-platform titles because it's no longer with Sony, so there's no sort of PlayStation, thingy with it. Effective immediately, SOE will operate as an independent game development studio where we will continue to focus on creating exceptional online games for players around the world and now as a multi-platform gaming company. Yes, that means PlayStation, Xbox, mobile and more, the studio said on its online on its official forums. It will be a business as well as it will be as business as usual, and all SOE games will continue on their current path of development and operation. In fact, we expect to have more resources available to use as a result of this acquisition. It also means that new exciting developments for our existing IP and games, as well as we can now fully embrace the multi-platform world we are living in. Our games and players are the heart and soul of our organisation, and we are committed to maintaining our portfolio of online games and pushing the limits of where we can take online gaming together. Daybreak President John Smedley firmly clarified on Twitter that all of our games are still here and we will continue to be. He also explained that he cannot wait to make Xbox One games. We're excited to join Columbus Nova's impressive roster of companies. They have a proven track record in similar and related industries, and we are eager to move forward to see how we can push the boundaries of online gaming, said Smelly in the acquisition announcement. We will continue to focus on developing accessible games to players around the world, as well as... didn't they just read the same shit twice? Sony Online Entertainment, newly branded as Daybreak, is a great addition to our existing portfolio and technology, media and entertainment-based companies, added Columbus Nova senior partner, Jason Epstein. We see tremendous opportunities for growth within the expansion of the company's game portfolio through multi-platform offerings, as well as an exciting portfolio for new quality games coming up, including the recently launched H1Z1 and the highly anticipated EverQuest Next to be released in the near future. Since it began in 1999, SOE has developed several MMOs, including EverQuest, PlanetSide 2, and DC Universe Online. Most recently, the company formed, formerly known as SOE, released an early access build of its Zombie Apocalypse Sandbox H1Z1, which saw something of a troublesome launch when the game included arguably pay-to-win microtransactions in the form of randomized airdrops, after developers swore it wouldn't allow players to purchase such gameplay-altering items. I'm sorry, I'm guessing this game didn't do too well, because literally I've never heard of H1Z1. So if I've never heard of it, then it must be doing bad, because I hear about everything, and I know about everything, and if I haven't heard about it, it's not worth knowing. Let's find something else for you to talk about, because I know I'm talking and talking, and as usual, I'm running out of time, so let's try and get to the good stuff. Here we go. Yes, as I'm playing a lot of Final Fantasy 15 episode Dusuke demo detailed. The upcoming Final Fantasy 15 demo, subtitled Episode Dusuke, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but fuck it, will be available to play on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One from the day accompanying game Final Fantasy Type-0 HD goes on sale. Download tokens will be included in the box. Excuse me, scratch my nose. Including the box of day one branded physical copies of Type-0 HD and bundle. Why is it got to be called HD? I don't get that. Bundled with digital copies for a limited time only. Publisher Square Enix has said the trial will include the region of Dusuke to explore. One of the many areas that will be found in the final version of Final Fantasy 15. Which lacks a release date itself. I mean, I'd love to know how far along they are in making this game. That would be nice if we actually asked them. Several hours of playtime will be included in the demo, along with plenty of hidden secrets. I mean, I'm just sort of paraphrasing now my own thoughts. I'd love this. This sort of reminds me of Zone of the Enders, which is an awesome game. But it came with the Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty demo. And basically people just bought that game to play that. Whereas, you know, Zone of the Enders, a really good game, powerful story, a really moving game. I mean, I wanted to buy it for the HD thing collection, but sort of never really got around to it. But yeah, I say, I'll have to do that, to be honest. There's loads of games that have come out with demos. Crackdown came out with the Halo beta, I think. Was it Half-Life, was it Crackdown 2? Something like that. I could have sworn that happened. Download codes will be redeemable from the 20th of March 2015 until the 20th of March 2016. Hang on, whoa. So downloadable codes will be redeemable. Oh, okay, so they're good for a whole year. So that's basically, if they're saying from March 2016, does that mean we're still not going to get Final Fantasy 15 for a whole another year? Maybe, I don't know. I mean, I it's weird, right? I'm going through a weird phase now because I'm totally thinking. I mean, because you know, I know I said on the show a couple of weeks ago we're getting the Final Fantasy 7 PC ports on my PlayStation 4, but I'm like, I kind of don't want it now because I'm playing Final Fantasy 14 and having tons of fun with it. Maybe something to have as nostalgia, really. But yeah, so Final Fantasy 15, we might not get until 2016, so we've still got a whole another year on this. It better be bloody good when it comes out. It really must. I mean, I'm happy playing Final Fantasy 14 at the moment, but I'll wait for reviews to see how it is before I even, you know, think about picking it up. Yeah, but I'll carry on reading. Say 2016 and will be remain playable indefinitely. The download won't self-destruct from your hard drive after a certain period of time. Let me just scroll down. Purchasing the Final Fantasy Type-0 HD will be your only way to get hold of the demo. Square Enix has said the publisher will not release the trial separately either. I love it if that changed. Type-0 launched for the PSP back in 2011. Oh, I see. That's why it's a HD. The new version boasts completely... I love that. Rejigged visuals, but lacks the original gameplay's multiplayer elements. A choice of English or original Japanese language will be available in both Type O and Episode. Oh, yeah, so basically, we're getting, you know, English voices in both the Type O for Final Fantasy and the Final Fantasy 15 demo. That's pretty cool. That's a bit worrying though. 2016 for this, really? I don't know. Here we go. Yeah, Rise of the Tomb Raider details. Lovely. This is also from Eurogamer. Oh, if I can just scroll down properly. A slew of details have emerged regarding Crystal Dynamics' highly anticipated Tomb Raider follow-up, Rise of the Tomb Raider. Unveiled as part of the Game Informer's most recent cover story, the developer has revealed some exciting details on what this sequel will add to the franchise. First off, it will encompass a greater variety of environments. While the 2013 Tomb Raider reboot was set entirely on one island, this sequel will contain at least two different locations, with one being Siberia, but deserts and forests have been teased as well. Plot will follow Lara Croft and her sidekick Jonah Maver, the cook from the last game, as they trot about Siberia in the hopes of discovering an ancient invisible city built by the Grand Prince of Vladimir in the 13th century. You see, since Lara's last crazy expedition, nobody will believe her about the supernatural spirit she encountered, which makes her feel frustrated and alienated. So to prove everyone's wrong and gain respect, she goes on an expedition to find proof of some of more mystical matters. Sounds pretty cool, actually. In terms of gameplay, one of the most exciting new additions is crafting. Taking a page out of The Last of Us and Alien Isolation, Lara will scavenge for metals, minerals, plants, animals, hired to construct things like poisons, ammo, traps, grenades, Molotov cocktails, and healing items. This makes a lot more sense than awkwardly gaining XP for slaughtering harmless animals, as was the case last time. Yeah, but we had crafting in the last one. I mean, smashing open crates, getting bits and pieces, trying to find chests that would give parts that upgrade your guns. We got that in the last one. I'm just guessing they're sort of flushing it out more of a more crafting-based dynamic to it, I'm guessing, as best I can say. Speaking of animals, hunting will play a large role in the sequel. Creatures will have more advanced AI and react to the climate. Some animals will only come out at night or during the day, and hunting for certain hides will add a Monster Hunter-esque element of tracking your prey. Which is cool, really. Environments 2 will also be much more dynamic than what we saw before. Enemies' line of sight and hearing will also be affected by such climate changes as fog and rain. Puzzles sound as if they're going to be a little less hand-holdy this time round. There will be even some decoding required as players try to decipher an ancient language that will shed new light on previous unclear secrets. Game Informer noted that the Xbox 360 version of Rise of the Tomb Raider will be handled by Nixxis Software, and that the Crystal Dynamics won't compromise on its vision for a next-gen Tomb Raider by diluting so it works on the Xbox 360. The existence of that game isn't limiting our work on the Xbox One version. I promise, Crystal Dynamics, Daryl Gallagher. Rise of the Tomb Raider will be out this holiday season on Xbox One and Xbox 360 while Microsoft is publishing it. It's suggested that it's only a timed exclusive, so you know, we will be getting this eventually sometime in the future for PlayStation 4. And possibly PlayStation 3. I'm not too sure about that at the moment, but I don't know. I'm looking forward to Tomb Raider. I mean, I can wait. I mean, as I say, I'm playing Final Fantasy 14 for now until, I don't know, I get bored of it. But yeah, I say Tomb Raider, bring it on. I'm looking forward to a new one. I mean, I played the last Tomb Raider game twice, you know, two different consoles. Game's awesome. This one's going to be good, just as good. Oh, here we go, yes. Square Enix invites devs to pitch ideas for Gex, Fear Effect, and Anachronox. I guess that's how you say it. But is it worth their while? Square Enix is like, yeah, I'll just read that bit. Yeah, the company said it's not necessarily looking for straight-up sequels to these games. Rather, it wants to see different takes on those universes. What would Gex look like in a side-scrolling adventure or a turn-based strategy? The company said. So feel free to mash up genres and get creative. It's part of Collective, a program Square Enix launched in November of 2013 to partner with developers for crowdfunding efforts. I'll carry on before I add my two cents into this. It works like this. Once Square Enix greenlights an idea, it puts out to the company to let them vote and provide feedback. After 28 days of this, the company decides whether or not to proceed. It's then on to crowdfunding, which is sure to raise eyebrows, given developers will work with Square Enix, a multi-billion pound video game publisher on its established intellectual property. Square Enix justified this by saying it will be the responsibility of the independent developer to build the game, and insisted the developer, we will still be the key beneficiary of its success. However, Square Enix will take 5% of the net crowdfunding's raised, assuming the initial target is reached, and a distribution fee of 10% net sales revenue to sell the game, and it will charge a 10% license fee for the use of the IP. Ouch, that's a lot of percentages. And obviously we'll have more involvement in direction of development, Square Enix said, because let's face it, we want to make sure the games that released is the game that's promised. Yeah, so basically they want to make sure, you know, it's as good as you basically want it to be. Square Enix said that the developer will keep 80% of that revenue from sales of the game, and who knows, maybe we'll be interested in licensing a sequel as well. Yeah, it seems like a pretty good deal. I've never heard of Anachronox. It might be good, don't know, never heard of it, whatever. But I've played the Gex games, you know, 15, 20 years ago. They were fun for what they were, as sort of platformer sort of games, you know, 3D platformer type things. Fear Effect, that game was so bullshit. I played both of them, the first and the second one, but there was just, I didn't know what the fuck I was supposed to be doing. These games are shit. They, I don't know. I mean, it's nice that Square Enix wants to help these crowdfunding stuff. It's like, but it's just, they really shouldn't. It's like you're putting ideas for shit games that, you know, that nobody wants to play anymore. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know they're trying to make themselves look good. I mean, Square Enix is a good company. They do some good stuff, but trying to push out old turds like Gex games and Fear Effect, it's not worth their time, really. But it's probably just a big sort of, you know, pat on their own back to show that, yeah, we care about the community. Would you like to see these games? If so, such and such and such and such. And, you know, I don't know. God, it really, really annoys me. It really does. Here we go. Oh, one sec. Oh, here we go. Yes, talk about Sonic. Sonic Boom game shifts just 490,000 copies. The lowest major Sonic launch ever. Yeah, Sega's disappointing Sonic Boom game sold less than 500,000 copies worldwide, the company has confirmed. It's about arcades being digged, but they won't put a bullet in Sonic. That figure combines the total from for both Sonic Boom Rise of Lyric on the Wii U and Sonic Boom Shattered Crystal on the 3DS. Sonic Boom exact sales total may be lower still. Sega has left it ambiguous whether the 490,000 copies sales figure relates to copies shipped rather than sold to consumers. If that's shipped, then that is terrible. And sold to consumers, that's not too bad, but it's still bad though. It should be noted that Alien Isolation is listed with 1.76 million sales, while developer Creative Assembly only just celebrated passing the actual 1 million mark. Either way, the numbers found with Sega's latest financial report place Sonic Boom titles as the lowest selling major Sonic launch in the history of the franchise. So, 25 years. Sonic Colors sold 2.18 million when launched back in 2010 for the Wii U and 3DS, although both platforms had far larger install bases. A fair comparison would be for Sonic Lost World, released for the Wii U and 3DS, but even this sold more than 710,000 units. Jeez. The original Sonic the Hedgehog remains the franchise best-selling title with 15 million units sold, ahead of second place Sonic 2 with 6 million. Wow, how the hell did that happen? Sonic original Sonic, right? It says it sold 15 million, but Sonic 2, which is the better game, sold 6 million? Jesus Christ, it should have sold way more than that. Wii spin-off Mario and Sonic at the Olympics sold 11.3. Well, yeah, of course it would. It's a Mario and Sonic game. Sonic Boom suffered a critical mauling upon its release last year when it arrived on eShop shelves riddled with bugs, including one that let you skip most of the game. That sounds pretty cool. The time is clearly long overdue for Sonic to be taken a well-earned rest, but well-earned rest, get his breath back, and only return once Sonic has worked on where he's supposed to be going. Eurogamer's Dan Whitehead wrote in his damning Wii U review. It pains me to say it, but Sonic Boom needs to be the last noise we hear from the Blue Hedgehog for a very long time. Yeah, I mean, we don't need any more Sonic games. It's not the 90s. I mean, I talked about arcades being outdated. But yeah, Sonic, it's like, yeah, he's a Blue Hedgehog that runs fast. We've been playing that same fucking played out game with the little blue thing for 25 years, since the, you know, 91, was it on this article? Yeah, since, like, you know, 91, when it came out on the old Mega Drive. I mean, I like Sonic. It's a good little character, but yeah, it's seriously, it's been done. They need to stop, like, now. Oh, here we go, yeah. Assassin's Creed, Unity, and Rogue shipped 10 million units combined, despite painful developments. Unity launched in November for the PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, alongside Rogue for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. A PC version of Rogue is due out later next month. By comparison, Ubisoft announced last May that it had shipped 11 million copies of the 2013 title Assassin's Creed Black Flag, released across all of the same platforms. With 5 months of sales still to go, it's likely that 2014's titles... it is likely that 2014's titles will beat that number by a decent margin. Ubisoft announced the new figures in the latest financial report, where company boss Yves Guillemot commented on Unity's much-chronicled launch issues. Each time there was a new transition of consoles, we tried to create engines that take full advantage of capacity of these those consoles, he said. In the case of Unity, we had to redo 100% of the engine, so when you do that, it's painful for all the group, and everything has to be recalibrated. With this game, a few things were not perfect when the game was launched, but the engine has been created, and it's going to help with brands shine in the future. The next fiscal year will launch a new Assassin's Creed game based on the same technology that powered Unity. We are very confident that the engines, the experiences learned along with the customer feedback will help us take Assassin's Creed to the next level of quality and innovation. Meanwhile, Ubisoft noted that it had shipped 10 million copies of the open world hackathon Watch Dogs. Himalaya Safari. Himalaya Safari shooter Far Cry 4 had shipped 7 million copies, while The Crew has shipped 2 million. Wow, that's not much. Watch Dogs holds the record for biggest launch of a new IP in Europe and the second largest in the US behind Destiny, which also holds the global record. In 2014, Ubisoft offered gamers the most diverse lineup in the industry. Game One continued. As a result, we've achieved a third quarter performance that was well above target, and we expect to generate a record level of free cash flow for 2014 to 2015. We are now capitalizing on the investments we made over the past several years to further develop our creative strengths, boost our marketing impact, and extend our digital footprint. Our performance is all the more impressive, given that is it wholly the result of Ubisoft's teams. Each of these successful games was developed by our in-house studios, and we own our brands, which means that our destiny is in our hands, and we are internalizing the value of creators for our shareholders. Basically, they're making shit tons of money, and it's keeping all the big people who put the money in the pockets very happy as well. But yeah, I didn't like Unity. It was sort of wandered off track. And literally, I've been listening to a whole bunch of other people talk about this sort of Assassin's Creed stuff. And yeah, it's gone away from what it was supposed to be back in the day. But let's find something else. Oh, here we go. Drive Club. Yeah, let's talk about this. Drive Club adds a free update that adds Japan Track. Drive Club developer Evolution Studio has released a new update for its PlayStation 4 exclusive racer, headlined by a new Japan Track. Scroll down the page. Yeah, the 69 megabytes. Patch is available to download now and brings the game up to 1.11. 6.56 gigabytes of updates have been released so far. This download also includes a new multiplayer time trial mode, which will unlock this Wednesday, the 18th of February, which is tomorrow. Add-on tours now have a lower stars requirement to progress. I wish they'd fucking do that with fucking damn it, I can't think of the game. Geometry Wars 3, because I want to progress further, but I can't because it's too hard. Previously 8 stars, previously 12, now required to reach a tour's second stage, and 22, which is probably 27, for the final stage. Other tweaks included the ability to choose paint jobs prior to an event, and the option to enable the rev counter in cockpit view. Update 1.11 also includes support for February's forthcoming main add-ons, including the free VUHL05 and the paid for season pass Downforce car pack. Both are due to arrive on the PlayStation Store next Wednesday, the 25th of February. Further down the road, Evolution is planning yet more updates. Private multiplayer lobbies, replays, and a higher level cap are on the way. Yet more servers upgrades are coming too, so that Sony can finally launch Drive Club's long-awaited free PlayStation Plus edition and Drive Club companion app. So that's pretty cool. I mean, I need to look in because The Crew excites me and Drive Club excites me, but I need to pick a racing game because I've got no racing games whatsoever. I mean, I was talking to a mate of mine at work, and he was like, "Well, he wants to get a PlayStation 4 as soon as we get some money." I wouldn't mind, having some more stuff to play, because I was saying, well, I've got this game, that game you can borrow from us. But I'm like, well, I don't have many games anyway, so I need to pick up some stuff. Or that's an idea. I just get him to buy the game for me, and I can borrow it off him. Let's talk about this. Screenwide demo crashes on the Xbox 360 and Xbox One midnight tonight, basically. This is from yesterday. Microsoft has announced a demo version of Screenwide, the upcoming roller coaster crash 'em up for Elite from Elite Dangerous developer Frontier. Trial versions of the game will be available to download for the Xbox 360 and Xbox One from midnight tonight. Frontier is no stranger to coasters. It developed the original Roller Coaster Tycoon and its sequels over a decade ago. Currently, they have has the similar looking coaster park Tycoon in the works of the PC. Screenwrite is more about coaster crashing, however, building most extreme rides and extreme rides possible, and watching the destruction where things go wrong. Awesome. I mean, I used to love doing that with the original theme park. The sort of, you know, you turn your roller coaster too far in one direction. And basically, yeah, the people would fly off. It was so funny. But yeah, I'm just sort of sick like that. Three career modes will be included in the demo. Screenwriter, where you can steer coaster cars through mazes. Engineer, where you can build coasters of your own. And the demolition expert, where you can work to create the biggest crashes. The demo comes 2 weeks ahead of Screenwide's official launch on the 3rd of March. There's a trailer, which I will watch once I have finished doing the show, because actually this game actually does interest me. I just wish it wasn't just a console exclusive, because it looks pretty cool, actually. Here we go, yeah. Amazon listings reveal new Dragon Ball Xenoverse details. This is from IGN. According to an Amazon Japan listing discovered by Shonen Gamer Z, that the upcoming fighter will feature at least 47 different playable characters. The guidebook's description also reveals that the game will have 12 master quests, 50 parallel quests, and 200 skill options, and 400 different pieces of equipment. As a time patroller, the fight to correct distorted history begins. Correct the history of the Dragon Ball for the time patrol quests and defeat Mastermind behind the change to revise the history. Published are the various performance and skill sets of 47 of the playable characters. I've just read all that sort of stuff. Scrolling down. Yeah, that's pretty much it. There's a bunch of old codes and stuff, which is basically no use to anyone. But yeah, I mean, this game could be good. I mean, I love Dragon Ball. I've got all the episodes on DVD and everything. I just haven't had a chance to watch anything since. Well, I haven't watched anything since I watched fucking Dragon Ball Evolution. That was like 4 years ago. Was it 3 years ago? I don't know when that fucking terrible movie came out. I do like Dragon Ball, but just never played a game for a while, really. State of Decay, Year One Survival Edition. Transfer saves. Developer Undead Labs and Microsoft has added new weapons, vehicles, characters for State of Decay's 1 Year Survival Edition on the PC and Xbox One. Undead Labs also adds a new mission type, as well as improved the visuals, animations, and user interface for the new version of the simulation-driven open-world zombie survival game. We already knew that Year One Survival Edition will include the breakdown and lifeline modes that were added to the Xbox 3 version, as well as downloadable content. Breakdown is a roguelike, never-ending survival mode that gets harder as time progresses. Lifeline is a narrative-driven storyline adventure set in the city of Danforth, both are in the Year One Survival Edition. Usefully, the military weapons and hardware added to the Xbox 360 version game with the Lifeline DLC have been added to the other two modes for Year One Survival Edition. Characters from Lifeline have been added to the Breakdown 2, as well as certain abilities. For example, being able to create ammo in a workshop in your base was an ability created for Lifeline that is now available to the rest of the game. There's also a new mission type. Here a mysterious organization is airdropping supply crates onto the map at random locations. While these crates include some of the best weapons in the game, they are extremely difficult to open as they attract a huge number of zombies and freaks. In keeping with the Undead Labs' focus on the State of Decay, community. Those who played the original get 33% off the Year One Survival Edition. That discounts works going from PC to PC. PC to PC and Xbox 360 to Xbox One. Those who upgrade also get an exclusive character. One sec. Guru Barney Cowell, who packs a suppressed rifle, the only one in the State of Decay, and you can transfer the save game across the Xbox 360, Xbox One in the same way. Xbox 360 players of Minecraft were able to do when moving onto a new console. As you'd expect, the visuals have been improved. Year One Survival Edition uses the same engine, Crytek's CryEngine 3, as the Xbox 360 version, but with improved animations, bug fixes, texture bumps, and a better draw distance and a 1080p resolution. This, Microsoft says, has a tangible gameplay benefit, as you'll be able to spot zombies and freaks from farther away than you were able to on the Xbox 360. You'll also be able to read the many signs placed in the world, some of which include nice backstories and details, such as a gas station that went bust before the zombie apocalypse. These signs were difficult to make out on the Xbox 360. The user interface has been a particular force for Undead Labs. It seems it's fair to say that the Xbox 360 version suffered from a cumbersome interface that poorly manages its many systems. So the user interface has been tidied up in a bid to surface features that were previously buried. It's a pretty complicated game, Seb Grinke, game developer at Microsoft Studios, told Eurogamer. There's a lot going on and you have a lot to do. We did a ton of user research, testing at the user research lab in Microsoft. The feedback we got was some people were struggling with the UI, redoing that unlocks that some of the elements of the game people didn't even know were there. Each character in the game has a number of traits from their former life before the apocalypse. So if you're playing a character who was into hunting before the apocalypse, they're going to be awesome at the shooting skill. So there's a ton of depth in terms of items you equip and who you are using for that. Who you use for that task. A lot of that was buried in the original game. Now it's much clearer and easier to see what these skills are, how to level up, and how to minimize and maximize your characters. While Undead Labs and Microsoft has managed to get State of Decay running at 1080p resolution on Xbox One, it failed to bump up the visuals to 60 frames per second. Instead, it sits on 30 frames per second. There's a lot going on, Grinke replied when asked about the game's frame rate. You get the whole community you're managing. You've got all the players, all these player characters, NPCs, tons of zombies, cars. There's just so much going on that it would have made worlds. Going on the world at 30 frames per second made sense. This article keeps going on and on, but I'm literally running out of time. But yeah, I say this is pretty much the end of the show for this week. Just one second, let me just call it bits. Thanks for everyone for listening. Don't forget as well, coming up next is Alcohol by Volume. Then you have My Time Now, and then finish off the night, you have Dutch and Royce. So basically, keep listening to Mollet Radio. Bunch of good shows coming up. Not sure what topic is for next week. I know I'll think of something. I've literally got plenty more news articles to go, so there'll be a ton to talk about. Don't forget, live events, 10 weeks' time from now, downtown Lakeland in Florida, 8:30 till midnight, 25th of April. It's going to be a really fun night. Don't forget to follow the show. Email us, antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. Join the Facebook groups, facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/antisocialgameradio. Don't forget as well, you can follow us on Twitter @MLRGamerRadio, and you can also follow More Light Radio, going to @MoreLightRadio on Twitter as well. Go to morelightradio.com/live every Tuesdays, 9 p.m. UK time or 4 p.m. Eastern to hear me live, that is. And don't forget morelightradio.com, look up all the shows, bunch of shows on the network, everything is good. Just sort of call up the right bits. Thanks everyone for listening, and I will see you again next week, same time. See you soon. Bye.
think fucking Ashley brought anything to the table?
My God, what a bag of burden that British piece of shit was. Holy shit.
A woman can...
From everyone here at BBC Radio 4, this is Alice Arnold, hoping that you sleep well and wishing you a very good night. Good night.
The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking north at Sierra, south at Sierra, south or southwest, or northwest, or northeast or east. Occasional rain, wintry showers, occasional rain, rain or showers, occasional rain, moderate or poor.